It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
A little bit less afraid when we have the means to keep breathing in and out because we have our nice little firearm in our side pocket, you know, or, you know, maybe we're Spider-Man. We got it on our wrist. Boom. You know, there's a lot of things coming as, you know, defensive weapons get a lot of times even, you know, non-lethal or less than lethal or not so lethal or whatever the heck it is. You know, it's going to be once you get energy down to, I don't know, a little micro battery that you keep, you know, on your left fingernail or your pinky or something that can power your entire force field suit or something, whatever like that. I mean, there's going to, you know, always be a development and enhancement of the ability to keep breathing in and out. I mean, that's what it comes down to. I don't want to lose life or limb. I don't want to be harmed. I don't want to be aggressed against. What happens when everybody has that ability? Do you have, like, more bullies? Oh, a bully, you know, they say you can't have body armor because they had these guys that went and robbed banks in Northern California, I think it was. It was in California. I think it was Northern California. You had somebody going in, they're robbing banks, and what do they have? They have body armor on. They got, you know, 7.62x39s, you know, AKs or SKSs or something. They're out there, you know, people are shooting them, and they're cops coming out with their little 9mm handguns shooting them. They're just like, you know, thunk, thunk, thunk. Yeah, you don't mean nothing to me. So they're out, you know, Robin, they're doing whatever. I think they finally did get killed. But they're, you know, so they use that as a reason you're not allowed to have body armor. Oh, and there's this good stuff. It's called dragon skin, I think it is. It's like scales, and it can stop actual rifle rounds. Because you keep hearing all about body armor. You know, I got bulletproof vest. Yeah, that ain't true. Maybe it'll stop a handgun or a 45 or something. But you get a rifle bullet, it just goes right through it. They have to have what they call ballistic shield or something like that. It's a big ceramic plate or even steel plate or Kevlar plate or whatever plates that they put in these pockets behind the vest so that, you know, it doesn't penetrate that. I mean, you know, it's like I'm just waiting for the cartoon they come out with. You know, well, it didn't go through the vest and you have this, you know, a powerful gun round, it goes through the Kevlar and it looks like a napkin sticking out your back. It comes into the front and, well, it didn't penetrate the Kevlar. Of course, the Kevlar is sticking out your back like a wet napkin, you know, but red wet napkin. And, you know, but it didn't go through the vest. Not through you, though, with the vest. But the, or you get hit with a shotgun blast. Heck, I mean, just the trauma, especially a slug to the chest, even if it didn't go through, man, you know, freaking like somebody taking a sledgehammer to you. So, I mean, so what does the government do? They go, oh, no, oh, you're not allowed to duck. Oh, no, you're not allowed to protect yourself. You know, that only criminals would get bulletproof vests. You're not allowed to defend your body. You know, defensive body armor, you're not allowed to get. Well, it's called dragon scales, and they were selling it on the market. It was very expensive, you know, and of course the military don't want it, you know, because it's like expensive. And they're going, yeah, we don't care about the troops. We want, you know, to have faster, you know, fighter planes or go bomb people or something. So they have this. So, of course, they go to the civilian market. Well, people start buying it up. They go, heck yeah, this stuff's cool. We want, they're buying it up. And then the military says, we'll give you a big military contract and everything under the condition you not sell it to civilians. You can sell it to police. You can sell it, you know, the militarized law enforcement. You can sell it to anybody but the people. This is, I mean, you know, they've got us trained in such a way that we think that's reasonable. Okay, well, of course, you don't want to, have, like people just to be able to, defend themselves, because then they would, defend themselves against the police. They would be able to go out and, cause all kinds of mayhem, and nobody would be able to, take them down with a bullet from a well-placed 9mm from, cop du jour. All right? Or you can look at it this way. I can't defend my life defensively. I'm just raising my hand, man. I'm just asking, I'm not allowed to have good body armor. That's what we're talking about here, right? Okay. Well, what happens when that becomes a force field? What happens when it becomes a camouflage? And what happens when it becomes, for whatever fill-in-the-blank reason, because I want to? I remember they were all freaking out whether you'd get gas masks. Now there's so much surplus from the Soviet bloc, the former Soviet Eastern bloc, that you have 15 gazillion. You go to a gun show, they got, gas masks for $19.99 and cheaper if you buy them in lots of three or five or something. Yeah, get the family pack. They're only $15, I mean, it's just because I don't know how good they are, and they got their little charge filter thing. Probably get you through a gas attack, at least tear gas or something. Because that's what a lot of these, guys going to protest do. They just have, gas masks. That's one thing I don't have. And FYI, bad guys, I don't have a gas mask yet, but I think I will. Because they're getting really cheap. Now my kids are old enough, I get your own dang gas mask, But, for my wife and I, would that be a good thing to have? You put it where? I don't know. In the car, in the closet, you probably want to readily have it. For what? For I don't know. Because it's $15. That's for what? One thing they had it on. Oh, it's from Sportsman. They do it online, and I think they may have retail outlets too. There's one called Sportsman here in Phoenix, but it's somebody pointed out to me. So on the internet, and I get their catalogs every month. It's always it's kind of a hunting thing. They've got all kinds of get the new camo chair, de la whatever, or the mosquito netting, or the new magazines, or the reloading, or something. They got all kinds of cool stuff in there. And there's one time they had this med kit that it was just the green floppy kind of Vietnam kind of thing, but it was more stiff on the sides, and it's probably 18 inches long by 10 inches deep by 12 inches high or something. It's got a strap on it and handles, and it's got all these gauzes and bandages and, the things that you put down your throat to be able to breathe, and you got, scissors and adhesive bandages and tweezers and all kinds of crap, okay? Compress band. You're like, it's like, medic! Medic! This guy shows up with his bag, right? The only problem is, it's all in Czechoslovakian. But it was only like $19.99 or $24 or something like that. I think I bought five or six of them, and I gave them away as Christmas presents. I gave them away to friends. I kept one or two, and I gave them to my family and so on. I think my boys got one. I gave one a couple of friends or something. I got at least five or six of these, and then told them about them, and a bunch of my friends got them, and then they're gone. They were very popular. They were out there, and then boom, they were gone. And I'm sure you probably get them. They're probably just more expensive. But it's all this surplus material from the Cold War. It was Czechoslovakian, and you have to go on. I'd take some of the stuff, and I didn't. I should do this. I should mark it. Because you got a packet, and it says, Garschniederschnott, or whatever the heck it is, and I have no idea. I got to open it, find out what it is. Well, then it's not sterile anymore. That kind of screwed you up. So I need to, go out and check to see if I could do it. And I just did a Google Translate on it, and boom, there, sure enough, there it is. It tells me what it is. Heck, I just type it in English, tells me what it is. So I go, okay. Compressed bandage large, this, so and so, whatchacallit. So I should be taking Sharpies and marking them, and I meant to do that, but I'm busy. But so these things are out there. You know, kinds of surplus stuff, surplus meals, surplus this, surplus that. You go to the gun shows. I tell you what, I spent most of my time at gun shows. It's not getting, more guns and ammo and all that kind of stuff. It's getting all the cool stuff, like a little, scalpel set or the little hemostats, little tongs, stackable scissors. You get, you know, the, you know, they don't have IV bags or syringes or anything. I haven't seen that, you know, but you go to the veterinary hospital for that. You know, the veterinary, you know, feed supply, get penicillin, get tetracycline, get all kinds, and the syringes and everything. You know, it's still legal to get it to, you know, you can keep your pigs healthy with the exact same stuff they say is illegal for you to do, for you when you need it. Oh, heck no. You got to go to the hospital or a doctor to get something that you can get for 50, literally, half a pint thing of penicillin and the syringes. You can get a few syringes, you can get it for less than 10, 15 bucks. I'm like, what? Tetracycline, different kinds of, you know, powders and so on. You just mix it in water, put it in a drink, boom, done. Don't even got to inject yourself. It's for the pigs and the chickens. Same exact stuff, okay? I even asked my pharmacy friends. I go, friend, you know, is this really the same stuff? Exactly, same stuff. Same. For the pigs, not for you. You know, I don't get angry when they do this stupid stuff, because this is the kind of stuff that makes their entire jurisdictional, we rule you, we don't have any credibility, legitimacy kind of stuff. It just serves my purpose to point out how stupid and useless and counterproductive they are to what their main objective was what? Protect my individual rights.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Sorrow, but I see trouble. I see trouble all my day. But we're looking for the positive way out of the trouble. You know, how can we do that? Well, how do we start this off? I mean, this whole hour just kind of went off on the gun thing, but I tell you, you know, it's really all centered around the same thing. Do we advocate the use of violence? Throwing lead really fast somewhere at something, that's, you know, I mean, it's not, I mean, unless it's some kind of art and you're, you know, shooting smiley faces in wood or something. I mean, I can't really see the, you know, the constructive benefit of it, other than, you know, the training it gives you and the ability to protect yourself and so on. I mean, it's a destructive effort by, you know, a lot of definitions. I'm not for destruction. I'm not for hurting. I'm not for inflicting pain or suffering. No. But, you know, I got a real simple, you know, thing I can go by. I wish to keep breathing in and out, and I'll do whatever I can to stop somebody that's trying to stop me from breathing in and out, or me to do so freely. You know, so, I mean, basically we live in an anarchist state anyway. So one thing a lot of people don't understand, you're already free. I mean, you know, somebody got a leash on you? Somebody got, you know, handcuffs on you right now? Somebody dragging you around by the nose with a ring in it? I mean, you can pretty much do what you want anyway. You know, I'm good. You know, right up until somebody comes up and says you can't. You know, and then what? Is it death penalty for running a stoplight? I mean, you know, it's going to get worse though. And really, as much as I have the fear from just the ineptness and the pain and suffering of a government that, you know, has a monopoly on force, I am more worried right now by individuals acting out of desperation by being in the circumstances that government created. That's where the real threat comes from, in my opinion. So people that, you know, live in urban areas that are, you know, you're in the city, you may have a little bit more food. Let's say you can last 1 month longer than your neighbors. They got 2 months worth of food. Hey, you got three. Guess what? they'd much rather everybody have 2 months and 3 days worth of food. You know, so and when people are starving, I tell you, man, all reason goes out the window. You know, I'd just as soon not put myself in that position to where I would even have to make that decision. I can't eat. No, I'm going to be the pious individual. I should have known better. I'm going to stay here in the front yard, and I'm just going to, you know, die of starvation and watch my little babies die because I was, you know, too stupid to get enough, whatever. And I'm going to count on maybe somebody be nice to me. And they'll give me some food. Please, sir, can I have some? Or would you be the one that would go out and at least look? Would you go cannibalize? Would you go take over someone's place? Could you do someone harm in order to keep breathing in and out? Whether you would or not, I'll guarantee there's a lot more people that would than you think. So what do? You know, you advocate. You think, you know, I love you so much, you know, that I'm going to sit and bust my butt and talk every day about you keeping breathing in and out because I love you. What if, you know, I mean, in addition to that, I'd rather you know, I think, you know, spreading love is probably not a bad idea. But what if I am acting more out of self-interest? What if I think you got enough food under your bed to last a little while, you know, that you might not be coming after me with a gun trying to take mine? And then some people, you know, have the decision in their mind, and I've known some of these people, I've talked to them, I mean, at least they say this, and I think a lot of them mean it, that they would rather be killed, die, suffer, than live with the pain, live with the stain on their soul of having killed another person. In fact, you know, throughout history, they talk about World War I and II and Vietnam. New troops on the line, they come in contact with the enemy. It was less than 20% that actually fired to kill. They would aim high, or they pretend they're doing something else, or they want to, you know, they didn't want to kill him. We're just not in that. It's not in our nature, certainly not in the way Americans were brought up. So that's why they go through all this training now, the Marine thing, you know, first on the beach, kind of kill, 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 kill. They break it down and build you up into this, you're just this automaton killing machine. And then if they can separate you from it more, you know, by joysticking a button, pushing kind of hellfire missile halfway around the world to blow up a wedding because one guy might be in there that you want to get, and you splatter the wedding party all over the walls, you know, in a nice little stained wedding dress, you know, oozing on the adobe. I mean, you know, then, yeah, it's okay. It's just puffs of smoke you see from high altitude, and it's just not a big deal. I'm going to McDonald's afterwards. I mean, this is, you know, some people really have a sense of their humanity, and they don't want to harm other people. And they have enough faith in humanity that they see the benefit in advocating that no one does. Or certainly doesn't have the justification. But, you know, there are some that also see the benefit of just and the responsibility to protect that freedom. And to me, you don't mind if I just keep breathing in and out, right? I'm good with that. Are you good with that? No, you're not? Okay, well, you know, I'll do whatever I can to keep breathing in and out. You know, you're trying to take away my life, my liberty, my property. It's three ways of saying the same thing. You know, I have my life. I own it. It's mine. You know, I get to use my liberty, my hands, to kind of go out and make stuff, and, you know, so I can sustain my life, so I can, you know, feed it and clothe it and shelter it and all that kind of stuff. And as I'm out there doing my liberty thing and providing, you know, the property I need to, you know, to that is my food and shelter and whatever, or to be able to buy it, you know, life, liberty, property is three ways of saying the same thing. It's mine, my time, my effort, my life. Me, 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 me. You know, this is so, it was like a big, giant revelation back in the day. You know, John Locke is out there, you know, before the founders were heavily influenced in the early 1700s, you know, where this, you know, John Locke was born. He comes in, he makes all these kind of, hey, you know, I'm a sovereign. I'm the, you know, the king. You know, who made him king? And I don't remember signing a piece of paper. I don't remember, you know, I'm born into this thing. You know, when we come back, yesterday we had on, was it yesterday? I think it was yesterday. We had on Stephen Molyneux. And he, I really like to get him for the Freedom Summit. We're going to be working on that. Yeah, you go to the top of freedomsphoenix.com, or you can type in freedomsummit.com. We got the list pretty much done. We have a couple of guys more we can add on to, and we'll kind of get the schedule done. And Sunday afternoon, we're going to kind of do a thing on the war, you know, anti-war, kind of, you know, get news on, you know, what is Iran. By then, we'd probably, you know, be in more war expansion. Anyway, it's going to be first week of December, so I got a plan now. I know, you know, it's not going to be less, I can tell you that. Well, they're going to declare peace by the end of the year. You know, by the time the Christmas trees come up in Arizona or in America, they're going to be in a Judeo-Christian Western ethic of, you know, the holiday season kind of thing. All of a sudden, they're going to find peace this year. Yeah, peace! Peace broke out all over the place. Probably not. So I am of the opinion that we're probably going to need to have some kind of a gathering of just, you know, re-energizing, if not the anti-war movement, but certainly just understanding what the new enemy is. I mean, you know, the Iranians, okay, what about them? Who are they? How many people live there? What do they do? Heck, they don't even speak Arabic. They speak, you know, Persian. They're not even Arabic. They're Persian. You know, it's they have an advanced society. And it used to be secular. I mean, it still has a secular community there quite a bit. But you know, you just gave power to the Ayatollahs and so on because it serves the bad guy's purpose. Man, got to have an enemy. Got to have an axis of evil, you know? You know, what was it, Cheney? We had Wilkerson. He's worked under Colin Powell. And we had interviews on where he's going, it was John Jay. Yeah, was that his name, Jay? Anyway, he's out of Washington, D.C. He's a journalist that we had on. He's interviewing the guy that was second command under Colin Powell. And he was saying Cheney wanted a new Cold War with China. They wanted war. They wanted to have a big, amped-up Cold War. Oh, we're going to get all kinds of goodies. Oh, military-industrial complex is going to do very well. They wanted it. You know, what's the next one? They're trying. Whew. Give peace a chance, man. Just give it a chance.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Nothing yet. You know, here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, we always just try and, you know, expand the mind, get you thinking a little bit more about, I don't know, you know, instead of, you know, what's underneath the shell game. Now, look under, is it this one? Is this what you're doing, playing the shell game there? And you're always so focused on the shell or what's underneath it, you don't even pay attention to the guy doing it. You know, there's somebody manipulating the shell game. So, you know, this is just, we just do what we can to kind of just get you thinking a little bit differently. So what we've been talking about today. You know, you have this whole series over the past 15, 20 years have been involved in, you know, just freedom activism, of which guns always wind up, you know, firearm ownership and use and carrying and all that just kind of comes up against, I don't know, somebody thinking that they can control the way that you can defend yourself. You know, or just have the ability. Heck, even body armor. Oh, no. We don't want people to have really good body armor. They might have really good body armor. You know, you can't have that. You know, so wow. I mean, does anybody even notice this stuff? And I think certainly the youth are. You know, this is not lost on them. And they communicate it instantaneously, you know, worldwide in all languages. Anybody, you know, that doesn't understand that, since the mid-90s, probably about 92, 93, I started to understand. I started to, it didn't take me very long to figure it out. And I go, and back then, think about it. You know, the people, just like they are now, it's always the, you know, 60 to 80-year-old people that have influence and money, and they've been in legislature and government service there a long time. They really run the planet. Just ask them. They'll tell you all about it. So my thought was, I go, okay, I'm good. I'll just wait for all y'all to die off. No problem. I'm patient. You know, I'll just go ahead and just do what I'm doing and advocate for whatever and educate, you know, my friends and young people and so on. And eventually you'll be gone. We'll be free and it's all good. Have a nice day. And it's kind of working out that way. But I tell you, it was really mostly the internet that did it. You know, there's a lot of people and it's not just the young people. It's everybody that's paying attention or cares. But there's one little thing they got to get off of. They got to get off of this idea that they have to be ruled. You know, I got to have a ruler. Somebody's got to tell me. Somebody's got to stop somebody from something. So somebody's got to be able to be in charge. Because if they're not somebody, then we won't have anybody. And I'd have to be responsible for myself. Well, yeah. Yesterday we had Stephen Molyneux on. We had a really good conversation for a couple hours, and we referred to some of his stuff, and I didn't get to play it straight through for you. It's 16 minutes, so we'll use two segments, and I'll talk about it a little bit at the end. I'll have time to kind of summarize it. But this was what really launched him a couple years ago. I think it was the end of 2008, so it's almost 2 years ago that he did this. And he did a series. It's called True News, and it was True News is number 13, Statism is Dead, Part 3, The Matrix. And he's a theatrically trained individual. He was born in England, I think. He lives in Toronto in Canada. And he was a successful entrepreneur. You know, he's a software guy. And he just, you know, hey, man, you know, I'll just do this freedom thing. And he started doing these podcasts that he would record in this 40-something mile drive. He's yelling at talk radio, I guess, in his car or something. He just started recording these things, put them up on the internet, and they exploded. And I already knew about him, and he has a little fan base, and then it turned into a big fan base, and now it's a huge fan base. And he was at the Porcupine Festival in New Hampshire where I was at, and I finally got to meet him, and, you know, what's up? And he came on the show, new friend, trying to get him for the Freedom Summit, and I think he'll probably do it. But that'll bring out a lot of guys. Oh, he's. But I'm going to play you one of the episodes that there's a bunch of them, and it's on the front page of Freedom's Phoenix today, and it's called Statism. It's about halfway down the page. You'll see it. I'm going to go ahead and play this for you. Just sit back, give it a listen, and you'll see exactly what I mean.
The Matrix is one of the greatest metaphors ever. Machines invented to make human life easier end up enslaving humanity. This is the most common theme in dystopian science fiction. Why is this fear so universal, so compelling? Is it because we really believe that our toaster and our notebook will end up as our mechanical overlords? Of course not. This is not a future that we fear, but a past that we are already living. Supposedly, governments were invented to make human life easier and safer, but governments always end up enslaving humanity. That which we create to, quote, serve us, ends up ruling us. The U.S. government, by and for the people, now imprisons millions, takes half the national income by force, overregulates, punishes, tortures, slaughters foreigners, invades countries, overthrows governments, imposes 700 imperialistic bases overseas, inflates the currency, and crushes future generations with massive debts. That which we create to serve us ends up ruling us. The problem with the state as servant thesis is that it is historically completely false, both empirically and logically. The idea that states were voluntarily invented by citizens to enhance their own security is utterly untrue. Before governments in tribal times, human beings could only produce what they consumed. There was no excess production of food or other resources. Thus, there was no point owning slaves because the slave could not produce any excess that could be stolen by the master. If a horse pulling a plow can only produce enough additional food to feed the horse, there's no point hunting, capturing, and breaking in a horse. However, when agricultural improvements allowed for the creation of excess crops, suddenly it became highly advantageous to own human beings. When cows began to provide excess milk and meat, owning cows became worthwhile. The earliest governments and empires were in fact a ruling class of slave hunters who understood that because human beings could produce more than they consumed, they were worth hunting, capturing, breaking in, and owning. The earliest Egyptian and Chinese empires were, in reality, human farms, where people were hunted, captured, domesticated, and owned like any other form of livestock. Due to technological and methodological improvements, the slaves produced enough excess that the labor involved in capturing and keeping them represented only a small subset of their total productivity. The ruling class, the farmers, kept a large portion of that excess while handing out gifts and payments to the brutalizing class, the police, slave hunters, and general sadists, and the propagandizing class, the priests, intellectuals, and artists. This situation continued for thousands of years, until the 16th to 17th centuries, when again, massive improvements in agricultural organization and technology created the second wave of excess productivity. The enclosure movement reorganized and consolidated farmland, resulting in 5 to 10 times more crops, creating a new class of industrial workers displaced from the country and huddling in the new cities. This enormous agricultural excess was the basis of the capital that drove the Industrial Revolution. The Industrial Revolution did not arise because the ruling class wanted to free their serfs, but rather because they realized how additional, quote, liberties could make their livestock astoundingly more productive. When cows are placed in very confining stalls, they beat their heads against the walls, resulting in injuries and infections. Thus, farmers now give them more room, not because they want to set their cows free, but rather because they want greater productivity and lower costs. The next stop after free range is not freedom. The rise of state capitalism in the 19th century was actually the rise of free range serfdom. Additional liberties were granted to the human livestock not with the goal of setting them free, but rather with the goal of increasing their productivity. Of course, intellectuals, artists, and priests were, and are, well paid.
Well paid. Absolutely. Got to have the court jesters. You know, there's somebody's got to toe the line. But we'll go ahead and play the rest of it when we come back. You stay right there.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue.
Yeah, What a Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong. You know, this is how I see the planet. That's why I got such optimism. You know, I'm just not that, I don't know, negative. You know, I feel pretty good. I love humanity. I love people. I think they're inherently decent. Seriously, I mean, if we weren't, we'd be extinct by now. I am people genuinely, I think, and generally want to do what they believe to be the right thing. They don't want to cause pain. I mean, you got sociopaths just messed up in the head. And that's all the more reason for all of us to be armed. I can cure that. We're going to wait for, you know, if you're not allowed to defend yourself, well, where's that cop handy in your pocket when the bad guy comes? I mean, you know, that's why, you know, the Wild West wasn't that wild. I mean, as much as, you know, sooner or later, it's you had people took care of their business on their own because there wasn't a choice. And they make you think you have a choice now. Well, dial 911. You think that was all about protecting you? That was just a security blanket they gave you. You know, dial 911 and then die. I'm just saying, I dial 911, you know, bring the cleanup crew, you know. I want you to be able to just keep on keeping on. Is that too much to ask? Well, Stephen Molyneux, he's got a growing fan base, and he's like, look, man, You know, this, free range is not freedom. You know, and he shows in the graphic, I mean, in the YouTube video, it has, you know, free range chickens are out in this open field, you know, and then he goes, free range is not freedom, and it goes to a box of McNuggets. He just wants you to be more productive. Give you a little freedom, you'll be more productive. Give you the illusion of choice, you'll stay plugged into the matrix. That's what the matrix is all about. You're all plugged in, and people just kept trying to wake up. You know, they gave you the illusion of choice inside the matrix. You still got to kind of, you know, feel the pain. And, you know, and able to make choices, give you the illusion of choice, you'd stay plugged in. You know, you didn't have choice. You know, all of a sudden you're like trying to wake up all the time. So, you know, you go through, he used that as kind of a basis for what he's had to say. Let's go and get back to it.
Of course, intellectuals, artists, and priests were and are well paid to conceal this reality. The great problem of modern human livestock ownership is the challenge of enthusiasm. State capitalism only works when the entrepreneurial spirit drives creativity and productivity in the economy. However, excess productivity always creates a larger state and swells the ruling classes and their dependents, which eats into the motivation for additional productivity. Taxes and regulations rise, state debt, future farming, increases, and living standards slow and decay. Depression and despair begin to spread as the reality of being owned sets in for the general population. The solution to this is additional propaganda, antidepressant medications, superstition, wars, moral campaigns of every kind, the creation of, quote, enemies, the inculcation of patriotism, collective fears, paranoia about outsiders and immigrants, and so on. It is essential to understand the reality of the world. When you look at a map of the world, you are not looking at countries, but farms. You are allowed certain liberties, limited property ownership, movement rights, freedom of association and occupation, not because your government approves of these rights in principle, since it constantly violates them, but rather because free-range livestock is so much cheaper to own and so much more productive. It is important to understand the reality of ideologies. State capitalism, socialism, communism, fascism, democracy. These are all livestock management approaches. Some work well for long periods, state capitalism, and some work very badly, communism. They all fail eventually because it is immoral and irrational to treat human beings as livestock. The recent growth of freedom in China, India, and Asia is occurring because the local state farmers have upgraded their livestock management practices. They have recognized that putting the cows in a larger stall provides the rulers more milk and meat. Rulers have also recognized that if they prevent you from fleeing the farm, you will become depressed, inert, and unproductive. A serf is the most productive when he imagines he is free. Thus your rulers must provide you the illusion of freedom in order to harvest you most effectively. Thus you are allowed to leave, but never to real freedom, only to another farm, because the whole world is a farm. They will prevent you from taking a lot of money. They will bury you in endless paperwork. They will restrict your right to work, but you are, quote, free to leave. Due to these difficulties, very few people do leave, but the illusion of mobility is maintained. If only one out of 1,000 cows escapes, but the illusion of escaping significantly raises the productivity for the remaining 999, it remains a net gain for the farmer. You are also kept on the farm through licensing. The most productive livestock are the professionals. So the rulers fit them with an electronic dog collar called a license, which only allows them to practice their trade on their own farm. To further create the illusion of freedom, in certain farms, the livestock are allowed to choose between a few farmers that the investors present. At best, they are given minor choices in how they are managed. They are never given the choice to shut down the farm and be truly free.
Think about that. You're never given the choice to just shut down the farm. I'll give you an example. This last, when was it? Last summer, I guess. Probably been almost a year. Yeah, it was last summer. I went to Jekyll Island, okay? Now, Bob Schultz from We the People, he wanted to give some kind of an endorsement, a rallying cry, beginning of the marketing campaign to push for the Continental Congress that they did near Chicago months later, towards the end of last year. Well, the trip to Jekyll Island was supposed to be kind of, you know, that effort. It was a well-choreographed thing, and we went to Newark, New Jersey, and we got on the train, and we took it down, took a day and a half or so, you know, overnight. We go down to Georgia, and we take buses over to Jekyll Island, and we stayed there for a few days, and it was cool, and we went back and took the train back up and came home. Well, you know, I met a lot of guys. I mean, that's where I, the owner of the Morning Network, you know, got me on the train, man. I'm surrounded by, they're going to give me what for. And, you know, hours of me holding my own, you know, kind of like, okay, we need to get you on the radio. So that's how that came about. And we had just getting near finishing our studio here because we were going to be doing a lot of stuff anyway. So that's, and it kind of developed from there. Well, what happened was I went with the idea that I didn't plan on going. It wasn't until like 3 days before we left that I actually went. And it was under one condition. I wanted to have the ability to vote none of the above. You're just going to reconstitute another plantation. You're just going to say, we're going to do it again. Well, how do you think we got here? So I'm just going, can I vote none of the above? Oh, yeah, sure, whatever. You can make that case, Ernie. I'm like, all right, fine, then I'll go. You know, but of course, they already had a prepackaged thing. They just wanted the participation of the Lovevolution. They wanted me and Adam Kokesh to go and everything. And both of us, we were ones that, although we love these guys, they're all great patriots, and they're out there doing what they think is right. And they represent another generation. They represent another ideology. They represent the whole concept that you can have a lever to rule people. You just got to get the right people behind it. And they never even questioned the lever. They never questioned the ring of power. They never questioned the concept. Can we shut down the farms and be really, really free? Well, that's where humanity is going sooner or later anyway. I'll see you next week.